Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes and kids, going to cons is our.
Everybody, and welcome to episode 61. Who could believe we'd make it this far without killing each other? My name is Tom Strange, and with me as always is the rest of the Long Box guys, and you're listening to the Long Box guys. Josh, how you doing and how you drinking?
I am doing pretty well, except for the whole tax thing, because I hate tax time, because taxes are taxing. I am drinking, who is this? Baxter's Brewing Wicked Dark Imperial Stout. It's pretty damn good. In an iron fist glass.
Nice. Mike, how you doing and how you drinking?
I'm doing excellent today, and I am drinking a Red Tornado, which is cranberry juice, tonic water, and some vodka.
Nice. Tommy, my good friend, how you doing and how you drinking?
I am tired, and I'm just drinking water tonight.
That's good. Keep hydrated. The Boston Marathon was yesterday. Did you run it?
I worked just a half a mile away from it.
My wife ran the Boston Marathon, and by the end, when she finally met me, I'm like, can we go home? I am exhausted. Because I sat in the sun for 5 hours drinking, watching people run by me. I was so tired. Lady could have kept going. And speaking of keeping going, who has kept it going longer than the Martian Manhunter? That's who we're talking about today. Our good friend John Jones, who would like to give me the background? Not it.
I would love to give you the background because the Martian Manhunter is my favorite character. He wasn't always my favorite character, but when I started reading some of his comics, that's when he really endeared himself to me. He was created in 1955, so he's been around for 62 years. He first premiered in Detective Comics as a backup story. He was called John Jones, the Manhunter from Mars. In that initial story, he gets teleported to Earth by a scientist who dies of a heart attack upon seeing an actual Martian. And John has no way to return, so he then takes up the mantle of fighting crime. Now, this is back in 1955, before superheroes became in vogue again. So most of his early adventures, which really endeared him to me, he used just his civilian identity, John Jones, a detective for the local Metropolitan Police Department, where he would go out and solve crimes. He rarely, if ever, fought any supervillains. And he actually had a few sci-fi adventures where he'd fight some aliens, but for the most part, it was just common criminals. And he would know because he has a whole bunch of powers, including super strength, not quite as strong as Superman, though. He does have Martian vision, which is very indescriptive. He has the power to turn invisible. He can go intangible. And most of all, he's one of the best telepaths in the DC universe. And as a result, in his early adventures, he would know who the bad guy is and what the scheme was. But in order to prove it in court, he would have to figure out how to gather the evidence. As Batman would say, the Martian Manhunter is almost on par with him as a detective. But Superman has actually said that the Martian Manhunter is the most powerful being on Earth, and Superman was including himself. That's how awesome he is. So from 55 to 58, he was the backup story in Detective Comics. Detective Comics started to wane a little, and superheroes came back in vogue. And so the Martian Manhunter started appearing more as the Martian Manhunter than John Jones, the detective. Eventually, the Martian Manhunter gets kicked out of Detective Comics as the backup story and put as the lead story in House of Secrets, where he is fighting a the idol of Diablo, which is creating monsters. So that's his main storyline there. He gets replaced in Detective Comics by the Elongated Man, who we've talked about in the past. After a few years of fighting the idol of Diablo, he then switches over and goes after Vulture, an international spy ring. He's one of the founding members of the Justice League. In fact, in many of the early Justice League stories, he's used in place of Superman because the editor for Superman at the time didn't want Superman appearing in too many comics. He was afraid Superman would be overexposed. So the Martian Manhunter got called up. In about the mid-70s is when the Martian Manhunter took a turn for the worst. He kind of disappeared off the comic scene. He later appeared in some Justice Leagues where he's the classic one where he's battling Despero, where they're sitting on opposite sides of the chessboard and the Justice League members are the pieces. And then later on, he comes back into the Justice League just in time for the horrible, horrible Justice League Detroit era, where he is one of the main members and develops a strong relationship with Gypsy, so much so that he considers her like an adopted daughter. So later on, they're very close in the comic books. When Justice League gets disbanded and then reformed as Justice League International, John stays around. This time, he's the straight man to all the crazy hijinks that are going on around him with Booster Gold and Blue Beetle and the rest of the Justice League. Cut to later on when they decided after Flashpoint they were going to reboot. Unfortunately, when they rebooted, they really did a disservice to John. He kind of wasn't a member of the Justice League anymore in the New 52, and that's kind of a shame. Although there's been some stories where they say he was a member, other stories they say he wasn't a member. Unlike Superman, he truly is the last of his race. Later on, Jerry Ostrander was able to retcon John's origin. Not only was he teleported through space, but he was also teleported through time. And the race of Martians that he belonged to, the Green Martians, were wiped out by the White Martians. And that's one of the reasons why he's really alone. And because he's been so alone, he has adopted lots of other identities all around the DC universe. So he's really popular in South America, but he has actual different identities in different countries. So he's like an espionage spy. He keeps track on every world power by infiltrating them as the shapeshifter that he is. But I keep on rambling. I could ramble all day about this guy. I love him. Let's talk about your guys' favorite Martian Manhunter stories. What do you got for me, Tom?
I was never a huge fan, but I did love the early comics where he was, I'm sorry, this is another one of those guys. I loved him in Supergirl. He was a lot of fun to see, and I figured it out kind of early. But I did, like you, I loved the earlier ones where he's, it was kind of funny because it was like a backwards CSI when you look at some of those old comic books. He knew who done it. He had to prove it by using forensics. So, you know, sometimes he was like, all right, well, I know that Bigfoot John did it. Bigfoot John has a size 14 shoe. I'll start looking for a size 14 footprint. Oh, good, there's one. I'll take a plaster cast of that. That proves that Bigfoot John did it. You know, he'd do, like, kind of reverse, you know, I already know the answer, but I got to prove that I did the work, you know, like a math problem. Those were a lot of fun. Plus, there were a lot of social relevance in those early ones. Not only was he going after mobsters, but he went after a lot of crooked politicians. I remember one where an orphanage was scamming milk money or something ridiculous like that, like stealing the food literally off the tables of orphans. And, you know, he's like, oh, I know he's doing it. I just got to prove it by, you know, going through the books and finding out, you know, all this other, you know, dumb stuff. I found it kind of interesting and fun when I was a kid that this super powerful being was trying to, you know, cram himself into our justice system and you know, using our system, you know, the correct way. So that's kind of my favorite runs. LT, what are yours?
So I've read some of the very early Martian Manhunter stuff, and I always thought it was kind of interesting that he was very, very deathly afraid of fire. I could see why he became totally phased out a little bit in the 70s because smoking was so popular. I read the 1998-2001 run Martian Manhunter, Son of Mars by John Ostrander and Tom Mandrake recently, and I really liked that run. And in it, my favorite piece of that run was, as Mike said, he took on other aliases besides John Jones, and one of them was he took on the guise of a supervillain, and he would convince other supervillains to hire him on, and then he would follow up their plan midway. And people would always be like, oh, why in the world did we work with that guy? And I thought that was kind of humorous. And also in it, he fights his twin brother, Malefic, to the death, kind of. And I thought that was kind of interesting. And it also had a lot of backstory on him and life on Mars with the other green Martians and what that was like and the death of his race. It had a different retcon for the death of his race. Malefic was the cause. Malefic had released a virus that telepathically killed the Martians as they melded with others of their kind. And it was a really interesting run.
I have to say, I don't have a favorite run, but I know this is Mike's favorite character, so I was going to plumb Mike's knowledge here. So, Manhunter, his first appearance is what, in the mid-50s, early 50s, 52 or 55, you said?
1955. There was a first appearance in 1952 by a different Martian in Batman comics who was also referred to as a Manhunter from Mars.
So what do you think of the very, very, pretty lot of similarities between the original Golden Age Vision in Marvel and Manhunter?
First Vision was a Silver Age creation, not Golden Age.
Dumbass. 1940.
The Vision?
The original Vision was an alien who could fly, create telepathic illusions of himself, had ice powers, and could teleport anywhere there was smoke. He was also an international police person and detective. He also incredibly looks just like Martian Manhunter, even with the big collar.
That is an awesome alley-fact. I don't know about this guy.
No, Kirby and Lee retconned him into the android later on, but the actual original Vision is an alien. I don't know if they specified Martian, but he has a lot of very, very similarities, including being vulnerable to fire because he has cold-based powers. So I didn't know if you'd seen that or any of those. I mean, they're super early. It's like Mystery Comics, like in the teens from the 1940s. So
no, I haven't read any of those. That's interesting. I'll have to look that guy up.
Yeah, there's some early storylines. There's not a lot.
Well, was he a superhero or a supervillain at that point?
He started out as a superhero, but at some point he gets tricked into fighting the Axis powers during World War II. But then is flipped around again to realize that he's wrong and fights for the right side at the end of the war. I didn't know if you had known those seen those similarities before, but check it out. I think it's pretty clear that there's some sort of something allegorical going on there anyway. And I'm always surprised how few individual titles Manhunter's had over the years, considering he's just like. I mean, you often say that Wonder Woman's number two in the league, but really, come on, Manhunter? If you don't know his one thing, he is clearly on Superman's level as far as everything he can do. You know, the telepathy, the super strength, the invulnerability, the stretching, shape-shifting. I mean, is there somebody with a longer list of powers that's not a gadget guy out there? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah, plus that intangibility coupled with the telepathic attack that's a pretty good combo when you're going against someone like Superman.
Fun Alec fact, when they formed the Justice League of America in the New 52, Amanda Waller recruited John Jones, the Martian Manhunter, to be their version of Superman in case the Justice League ever went bad and they had to take him out. The Martian Manhunter was supposed to take out Superman.
In the Ostrander Mandrake run that I read, at one point the Justice League thinks that John has gone rogue and they try to capture him, and he pretty much evades the entire Justice League and escapes from the Watchtower.
I mean, yeah, if evasion, yeah. You can go invisible and tangible, and you can shapeshift into anybody. Can you actually be found? And you're the most powerful telepath, and you can mentally shield you and the people around you. So even if somebody knew where you were, you could shield them telepathically as well. That guy is gone. He is in the wind. There's no way you're finding that guy. But the other thing that intrigues me, Mike, is over the years, there's been a pretty big disparity in the level of his vulnerability and or phobia of fire. What do you think is the least effect it's had on him and the biggest effect? Like, who's like sort of slid that scale enough where he became ineffectual because of fire, or really it was sort of tertiary to his like power, you know, this is the powerhouse he is.
Well, like in the early comics, when somebody was smoking, he would actually avoid him. I'm not kidding.
Okay,
he'd be like, you know, if the bad guy was smoking, he'd be like, I'm going to take a step back. I don't want to arrest him now. I'll wait till he's done with that cigarette. You know, that's how bad his fear was. They've retconned him so much, though. He's gone through a whole bunch of different versions of the retconning. At one point, he wanted to become to face his fear of fire and started dating a female supervillain. Who was a pyrokinetic, so that way he could overcome his fear. And he succeeded, but when he did, he unlocked some other Martian trait. Apparently the Guardians were very afraid of the pyrokinetic Martians, the Guardians of the Galaxy, and they had reworked the Martians to make them afraid of fire so that they wouldn't pose a threat to everybody. They would... It's a whole long story. And again, he's done disservices a lot. He said he didn't have a lot of series via his power level. He's only had three. He had a mini series. He had the Ostrander series. And then he recently had a new series in New 52, which was started off really good, but wasn't that great. And as far as him being durable, he once had his body destroyed. The only thing that survived was his hand. And he transferred his soul into the hand and then regenerated his whole body from it. So he's got regeneration abilities too.
Yeah, but, and somebody had to, you know, at some point talk to that hand.
So my favorite comic of the Martian Manhunter just came out recently. About 2 months ago. It's, or actually last month, Scooby-Doo Team-Up number 24 with Scooby-Doo and the gang and the Martian Manhunter. It is just so much fun. It is a throwback comic. It starts off with the Scooby gang uncovering the villain. And when the villain says he's going to escape, Shaggy punches him and knocks him out. And then it's revealed, oh, wait, that's actually the Martian Manhunter. Shaggy was hiding behind a sarcophagi in the museum because he was afraid. Mm-hmm. They find out that aliens are being kidnapped by the government because somebody is disguising himself as the Martian Manhunter and going on the air telling everybody it's time for the alien invasion. All of us, we will reunite and we will overthrow the humans. And so he wants the Scooby gang to help solve the mystery so that way he can clear his name. And he brings them to a little hiding spot where he's got the only other aliens who have not been captured. And it's funny on multiple levels. One of them is Jem, Son of Saturn. There was an original Martian Manhunter series planned, but the guys in the Justice League had a different plan for him, and so the writers changed him to Jem, Son of Saturn, and just changed him from green to red. And that was pretty much all they did. And so Son of Saturn is in there along with some others. So one of them is the Blue Starman, and there's been so many different versions of Starman and Starfire, and they make a great joke of it. Fred looks at Starman and says, I thought Starman was a young hipster guy. No, that's the other Starman. You're his father? No, that's the other Starman. An Earthling with a mullet? The other Starman. An alien prince? The other Starman. And then Daphne looks at Starfire and says, you're... And she says, no, I am not the Russian superhero Starfire, nor the barbarian freedom fighter Starfire. And Daphne says, oh, actually, I was going to say you look a lot taller than you were last time we met. So it is just... It's just a joyous comic book with all sorts of throwbacks for anybody who's a fan of DC Comics. It turns out that the Manhunter's old villain, Professor Hugo, has been posing as him. I know I've spoiled it all for you. Who would have guessed that the Scooby Gang is able to solve the mystery and save all the aliens on the planet? If you haven't had a chance to check out the Scooby-Doo team-up adventures, I really recommend it. It is just a lot of fun every month.
Mike, is that Scrappy-less?
It is Scrappy-less, I assure you. But they do mention the Martian Manhunter's sidekick, Zook, which when I heard that,
I hear
like,
he skipped a groove.
No, that's Zoot, not Zook.
Sorry. Well, that sounds like a fun one to check out. Does anyone else have any honorable mentions or anything? I think we're doing a great disservice if we don't mention how great your Martian Manhunter cosplay is, Mike. I don't believe – does your wife listen to this podcast?
She does not. She listened to it once by accident and said LT was her favorite. So I don't want to listen to it anymore.
So since your wife doesn't listen to it, how much did the mask cost that you bought for your cosplay?
More than every
don't
other
say it, Mike. Don't say it.
Oh, say it.
Just because she doesn't listen to it now doesn't mean she's never going to listen to it. And somebody she knows is going to listen to it and tell her how much that mask costs. I would say keep that information personal. Keep it.
Can we?
Keep more it all than my up first car.
I was about to say, was it more than Wilbury won your first automobile? For certain. Yes. All right.
So before we get off the topic of Martian Manhunter, so when I read the Ostrander series, Mike, and I read about how all the Martians would meld together with their loved ones and become one with their loved ones, it kind of made me think that that I could eventually see a series where the Martian Manhunter really was the only Manhunter ever, and that really the Martian Green Martians were actually one person with splinter personalities, and that maybe he got healed.
Yeah, that's a good possibility. I know in the last series he had destroyed himself, but what he did is he placed his consciousness in 8 other bodies. They eventually recombined to form the Martian Manhunter. It was a very long, confusing series.
So the I have to say, his depiction in a lot of the DC animated material, I've really enjoyed as well. So, I can't remember, what was the standalone movie where the government was trying to hunt him down and they were going to shoot the rocket into space? Does anyone remember which one that was? I really enjoyed that, where he was hiding amongst the people, and I think it was like a Green Lantern. Was it a Green Lantern movie?
Don't shoot or my... don't stop or my mom will shoot. That was that.
And, and I really enjoyed his depiction in Young Justice, too.
That made me laugh. I don't care about you guys. That made me laugh.
Fun Alec fact. Don't Stop or My Mom Will Shoot was an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. No, wait. It was Sylvester Stallone.
Fun Alec fact. You're wrong as hell. That was Sylvester Stallone.
That's why I corrected myself.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Almost quick enough.
Speaking of almost quick enough... Josh, do you have a quick tangent to take us out on? Or over on?
I was thinking of Marathon Monday. And so for the folks of you around the country, Monday, the 17th, is a holiday in the state of Massachusetts, Patriots Day, also only appearing in one other state in the Union, Maine. where we kind of get a day off and we kind of don't. But the good thing for those of us who are paying taxes in the state of Massachusetts is we get one extra day to file because it was Tuesday the 18th. But does anybody else have any obscure holidays that they enjoy?
Well, in New Orleans, we have a thing called Mardi Gras, which is a lot of fun, as you guys well know.
Really been enjoying May the 4th for a Star Wars holiday. A lot of groups around here do something. Last year, Fenway Park went all out, and they had cosplayers cosplaying as different Star Wars characters on the field and some mid-things. So May the 4th has become one of my new faves. And, of course, 420.
Back when I was buying my mother lots of tacky religious gifts, I used to make sure to send her something nice on Flag Day.
So, for those of you, we grew up in a very small town back when there wasn't the internet. And being the only Jewish family in town, anytime I wanted to take a day off from high school, I would make up a Jewish word and claim it was a holiday. And since nobody had any possible way of finding out whether or not it was actually a holiday, they couldn't really say jack shit about it. So my favorite holidays are all the fake holidays I would have to remember to celebrate on the same day the following year in high school when I made holidays up to skip school. Mom, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry. I'm not sorry.
And who could ever forget that you got Schmegma Day off?
That's right.
Every single year.
Schmegma Day. That's right.
No, you know, celebrating the Feast of Schmegma. Your mom knows about it.
Does she? Does she?
Does she? Well, since we finished off that delicious Schmegma, Mike, do you have anything at the front of the law box?
I do, but first I have a question for you guys. What is your favorite cartoon strip?
That's still going? So I'm going to have two. If you're talking all time, it's Calvin and Hobbes by leaps and bounds. I pretty much own everything Calvin and Hobbes has ever printed. And I will say Bill Watterson, he has licensed none of his material for anything other than the comic strips and the books he publishes personally. So if you have a Calvin and Hobbes t-shirt, bumper sticker, glass, anything else, please scrape it off your car, throw it away, or burn it, because Bill Watterson has nothing to do with it, and that man deserves every ounce or every dime he has ever earned. I love that comic. Do the right thing, people. Do not buy Calvin and Hobbes merchandise. And Bloom County. I love Bloom County. Carry on.
Josh took mine. I like Bloom County.
What was the one that came after Bloom County? Same writer?
Outland.
Outland. I really enjoyed Outland. I was the editor for our community college paper, Stick, way back in the day, Springfield Technical Community College. And I was the editor of the paper, and I could afford to, from the paper, buy one comic strip. And I bought that because no other paper was carrying it. So we were the only ones carrying the Outland in Massachusetts for a full year. And I was really proud of that. And I got to see all the comics sent and had them all. So Outland was like a lot of fun for me. I really enjoyed that. But if I'm looking at a newspaper, I usually read Ziggy first. Is that weird? I like Ziggy. I'm weird. All right, it's fine. Yeah. You bald. I something about that bald, kind of ugly, doughy guy I just like.
On the side note to your side note of the side note, if anybody gets a chance, there's a comic strip called Deflocked. Deflocked. It's about a little sheep and a dog and a couple other side characters having their misadventures. And it is written and drawn by a person three of us went to high school with, Jeff Corvo. So he has been syndicated in 27 papers, and if you should have the chance and he's not in a local paper by you, you should call your local paper and say, hey, we want Deflocked in our Sunday paper right now because it's by Jeff Corvo and we like Jeff.
Jeff used to beat the shit out of me. Screw that Jeff guy.
Jeff couldn't beat anybody up. You're thinking of somebody else.
You're thinking
Who am I thinking of? Well, there were so many Corvos.
I don't know. It was not Jeff Corvo. He was a magician. He was not beating people up in high school.
Oh, you're right, Jeff Corvo. Who am I thinking of?
I don't know, but it wasn't Jeff Corvo.
All right, fine. You can read
Pick
the
another Jeff, Tom. Pick another Jeff.
When you got beat like up, a magic were trick. There bits of rabbit's fur in your wounds?
Were there quarters in your ears?
Was he hitting you or something in the face? Was he hitting you in the face with the same card over and over and going like, is this your card? Is this your card?
Where did I find this pigeon, Davidson? Where? You don't know? Yeah, that wasn't Jeff.
Fine.
All right.
Somebody else. Hey. Snarf! 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 Yeah, freaking Oxnard.
It was pretty close. I almost made myself snarf.
All right. Hey, Mike.
All right.
What do you got in the front of the log box?
The reason I asked you is because I was positive that at least one of you would say Calvin and Hobbes, because that is what I have in the front of the long box. Not actually Calvin and Hobbes, but the closest thing you're going to get in comic books today is Spencer and Locke by Action Lab Comics. I had recommended it a couple months ago when we were talking about books for the guy from Tampa, and I got to tell you, I was not disappointed. The first issue came out last Wednesday. I picked it up on Comixology. It's only $3. I say every one of you, I'll give you the $3 challenge, and I mean this for the long box guys, not every listener, just in case. But pick up Spencer and Locke. It's written by David Pepos. Art by Jorge Santiago Jr., colors by Jason Smith, and letters by Colin Bell. It is a delight. It is a throwback to the joy of Calvin and Hobbes if he lived in Sin City. Because Hobbes, in this case, is Spencer, and he is a blue puma who is missing an eye. He's got a little button for it. Locke is now a detective, a grown-up detective, but he still carries Spencer with him everywhere he goes. And I think he's insane because he still relies on his childhood imaginary friend to not only help him solve crimes, but to fight with him when he's in fisticuffs. It is a good book, and if you are a fan of Calvin and Hobbes, you should go check it out. I don't want to give anything else away. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but a lot of fun.
Well, that's great. What's in the back of the long box today there, Tommy?
I'm going way back. Green Lantern, number 89. This was written by Denny O'Neill with art by Neil Adams. In this, it is a very eco-friendly storyline, and since Earth Day is coming up, I figured I would go with this issue. Green Lantern takes Green Arrow and Carol Ferris to one of Ferris Aircraft's plants because Carol is working on a secret new aircraft that is going to make things more economical for her. But there is an eco-terrorist, if you will, who has been protesting everything that's going on because the new aircraft engine is horribly polluting, and it's a one of those classic socially relevant stories that Neil Adams and Denny O'Neill did back in the 70s, and it was a great read, and it's got fantastic art, and it is very eco conscious.
Is that in one of the trades, LT?
I have it just on its own, but it probably is in one of the trades. Like I said, it's Green Lantern 89, so it's probably in one of the Showcase Presents. But I bought it just on its own through Comixology.
So it's only $2 on Comixology?
Yep. Okay, and cool. It's well worth it.
Well, I'll have to check that out. That one does sound pretty good. I'd like to talk real quick. I always talk about something when it comes to social justice or social relevance. And today I want to talk a little bit about Batman and Robin fighting the Bund. I put a Twitter post on it a couple weeks ago, and I did some research into the Bund. The Bund refers to a pro-Nazi anti-Semitic organization made up of mostly German Americans who during World War II would raise funds and usually didn't go straight to the Nazi party. It would go more towards war relief, you know, blankets and medication and stuff. They were kind of set up to be more of a humanitarian-looking organization. But, of course, every, you know, Band-Aid, every blanket, everything that went over to Germany at the time was helping the Nazi party, you know, be able to take care of the people and keep the people on their side. So the Bund were not exactly a racist organization or an anti-Semitic organization so much as they were a pro-German organization that kind of got infiltrated and taken over a little bit. The reason I put it up initially is I was happily misinformed when it came to what the Bund kind of stood for. I thought it was a racist slur against Germans, and it was more of just what the, you know, organization themselves called themselves. So it wasn't actually a racist slur to fight the Bund, the evil German Bund, because none of it was really, you know, racist. You know, it's what they call themselves. But if you look at those old Batman PSAs where they're selling war bonds and stuff, it's interesting how they're trying to be careful not to offend German Americans who are loyal to the United States and targeting more of German Americans who still have sympathies for Germany and are helping the Nazis. Even if they're kind of going on about in a tangential way. Interesting stuff if you are a historian, so take a look.
I'm nodding in agreement for the audience at home.
Yeah, I know. I'm aghast myself. All right, so that pretty much does it, except for, oh, wait, we must have a letter this week, don't we?
So, yes, we have a letter. Dear Longbox guys, I am an American Studies student at Penn State University, and for the final of my pop culture class, my teammate and I have to conduct a presentation about Wonder Woman, her birth, meaning, purpose, history, etc., basically just analyzing her existence. We were wondering if you would be able to answer via video a series of questions we can send to you. Our goal is to make a documentary featuring a few pop culture slash superhero historians answering in-depth questions we set out. Our professor doesn't believe we can make it happen, so we would appreciate your help. Thank you kindly, Gabriel McNichol. So we actually already did this, and we are going to be in a documentary that Penn State is putting on. If you go to Penn State, you should look for that documentary. I'm sure she'll be posting it on YouTube, and it'll be awesome because we are very insightful, especially about Wonder Woman.
It's true. We know an awful lot about Wonder Woman. And you'll find out what the Golden Age Challenge is. Yeah. You can win money
Tom
or prizes
and
through...
particularly insightful. I just ask questions. It's not great. You know what Casper Van Dien would say?
I'm Casper Van Dien, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
All right, guys. That's going to do it for us here at the Long Box. Anyone got any plugs before we go?
Yes, I would like to plug Suit Up for Kids, a great nonprofit organization. You can find them at facebook.com/suitupforkids, and you can also find them on Twitter at Suit Up for Kids, but instead of the word four, it is the number four. They raise money for children who are terminally ill, and they also provide cosplayers to go cheer up the children.
Excellent. And as long as we're talking about Twitter, I'd like to talk about us at the Long Box guys. Take a look at us. We've had some interaction with Suit Up for Kids. They've friended us. We friended them. And we've talked a little bit about maybe some possible cosplays in the future that we or maybe some of our fans could do. So take a look at that and join the conversation.
I'd like to say hello to the friendly neighborhood comic guys, friendlycomics.com. Also, coming up in the state of Massachusetts, Massive Comic-Con 2017 at the Worcester DCU Center on, when is that, June 24th and 25th. Go check out Massive Con because, hey, you know, new cons.
New cons.
I would like to plug our monthly giveaway. In April, we are giving away Morning Glories Volume 1. All you have to do is email luckybastard@outsidethelongbox.com. Let us know what you like about the podcast. Let us know what you'd like us to do better. And give us suggestions for what you'd like to hear. And you'll be entered to win our monthly giveaway.
Yeah, one of the Longbox Legionnaires, John in Uganda, has actually set us up for next month. He asked us if we could talk about sidekicks. So next month we are doing nothing but sidekicks. In fact, next week our podcast will be all about the different Robins.
And that should be a lot of fun. Those Robins are a hearty bunch, usually. And
The hearty bunch? Really?
They're a hearty bunch, usually, and they'll be a lot of fun to talk about. Unless we kill them off somehow.
Only one of them has died, that if I can recall. Oh, no, two of them. Darn it. Spoilers.
A couple of them die. Come on.
Most of them.
No, three. Oh, my God. They're all dying.
They're just fine.
Oh, four. Damn it. Sorry, I was getting carried away. Hey, speaking about getting carried away, you should totally go check out our videos on YouTube. The Longbox Guys, just search Longbox Guys, and you will see we have a video not only about Green Lantern in 1941, and we also have a video about Nightwing, who is Dick Grayson, one of the Robins, all about his miniseries from 1995, along with some other videos. Check it out at YouTube. Just Google or just search Longbox Guys. And we always have to thank Kirby Crackle for providing our geek rock music. You heard him at the beginning singing Going Home, and we're going to play him at the end also. You can find him at KirbyCracklemusic.com.
Well, that's great. I love Kirby Crackle. What song are you going to take us out on?
It's a surprise.
Yay! I love surprises.
I would also, now that we've mentioned one comic book store, we should mention a couple others. Our good friend Chris Mitchell, who runs 99 Issues out in Mobile, Alabama, should really go check that out. And if you are in the New Orleans area, you can go to my comic book store, which is More Fun Comics. And my other second favorite comic book store in the New Orleans area is in Metairie, and that's Heroes Corner. Both shops are really good.
And if you're in Worcester, Mass., check out That's Entertainment on Park Ave.
And we should also thank some friends of the podcast who also have their own podcast. Cheryl Jones does a great podcast called Movies Made Me. And you can check out the Nolan Nerd Couple, who have an excellent podcast. They have been going crazy lately. They spent the week down at the Star Wars Celebration, so they've had a ton of different podcasts, and their blogs have been going on.
I love listening to the Star Wars stuff from them. It's good stuff.
Yeah, they're very knowledgeable. They do a great job. Smart, and they're super nice. Every time we run into them, it's always a treat.
Speaking
I guess that's
super
just about...
nice. Oh, no. Speaking of super nice, we should not forget about IanLino.com.
IanLino.com.
Yes, IanLino.com, purveyor of fine T-shirts, geeky wear, glasses, stained glass prints, books about Muppets, you name it, they got it. At IanLino.com. Yeah, I stole your thunder, LT. How do you like that?
It's fine.
Thunder stealer. Well, that
does spell
do
that,
it,
Mikey?
Though.
I don't know. How do you spell it?
I-A-N-L-E-I-N-O.com.
I'm
going to
edit that out.
Just, I do. Oh, Mike, please, just from this episode alone, just string together all his ums and just put that there. And that will do it for us.
I don't have that kind of time, Tom.
I was going to do shots. Yeah, you do. You have nothing else going on. That does do it for us. And that is the name of my Divinyl, my all-male Divinyls cover band. The Divinyls had one hit wonder called I Touch Myself. Yeah, Josh, it made sense. Yes. By the way, have I ever told you what it would be like if the Divinyls were men? this would be the song would be like, when I think of you and three of your friends, I touch myself. I do. I honestly do. I put a lot of thought into that joke years ago, back when the DeMiles were relevant.
Still I needs a little
that
polish.
That's a little polish. Little polish.
That's hurtful.
Yeah. Defining them as relevant seems difficult.
They were relevant at a time. As relevant as Shakespeare's sister.
Yeah, it was like 11:52 on a Wednesday in 1998.
Damn it, Josh. We're going to be in a Twitter war with the Divinals now.
Yeah, we should be so lucky.
And the Vinyls, if you want to tweet at us, it's at the Long Box.
At the Long Box, guys. Come get it, the Vinyls. Come get it.
And the Vinyls, if you want to win a copy of Morning Glories, you got to write in to Lucky Bastard at OutsideTheLongBox.com.
And
I'm going to link them to
our
everything.
YouTube channel. I'm going to make a video of just photos of us to the Vinyls. And I'm going to put that on our YouTube channel, so everybody should subscribe.
You better find a different song than I Touch Myself, because I don't want us in cosplay with the DeVos going, I Touch Myself, over and over again.
No, they probably made a different song.
They probably did.
It's just going to be I Touch Myself,
album.
But it's going to be just photos of Josh as a child.
Yeah, I think you already killed that with the other freaking YouTube, dude. Seriously? That's the picture you picked?
Yeah.
You were kidding. Seriously.
Seriously.
That's how I picture you.
Please don't.
Please don't.
Yeah.
And, Josh, as long as we're asking about this, there was a cop in here looking for a small lost child. Is this your sector?
This is definitely not my sector.
All right, and Mikey, what is this podcast like to you?
It's like the Divinals, but good.
Hey, the Divinals were fine. Don't diss what you hate. You don't hate them. Do you guys remember the time that L7, the drummer, hit me in the head with a dildo? Josh and Mike, you were both there. We were at Club Vertigo.
Oh, in Northampton?
Yeah, we were at Vertigo, and I was stage diving one too many times, and the drummer had this giant dildo, and she clocked me in the back of the skull, and I just fell forward to the ground, man. I almost dropped dead.
This is the drummer for the Divinals?
No, from L7.
Oh, so now we're going to get into Twitter war with L7, too?
No, they're Thanks, tough. Man. I don't want to get into Twitter war with L7. And,
hit me in the back of the head with a dildo once. Shame on me.
Shame on you. Tommy. Sweet Tommy. Tommy, did you come up with a catchphrase yet?
Hey, Tommy, you remember that one time you almost killed Juliana Hatfield?
Yeah, I remember that. That sucked. That was not my fault. Yeah, I threw a beach ball on... It was totally my fault. Someone was throwing a beach ball around, and I hit it towards the front of the stage, and it knocked over her water bottle, and it shorted out her guitar, and she, jumped back, and I thought we electrocuted her. That was hilarious.
Yeah.
That would have been terrible. And the crowd turned on me. Oh, my God. They wanted to rip me apart.
Well, yeah.
There
were a lot of emo people wanting to kill somebody.
Yeah. That was the most threatened I've ever felt in a crowd of small emos. Because, I mean, they had Overbear. No problem.
Thanks for listening, folks.
And remember, don't diss what you hate. Promote what you love.
I hope you've got a healthcare plan. And if you don't, I understand. But I got a question for ya. Does your hideout have a covered lot? And here's the hours I'm looking for. A part-time shift from noon to four. But not on Tuesdays, cause that's when I dungeon master for my friends. Do I qualify for this? Well, let me tell you what you've missed. A fired lasers from a sub. 1 year I blew a whole bridge up. I spent a month up I could have gone much higher, except for the fact my boss was burned alive.